91.9 WNRN Charlottesville.
89.9 WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg.
Listener supported independent music radio. WNRN.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in. We always appreciate your support. And we need your support today. Thank you so much. Our guest, State Delegate David Toscano, is with us. David, how are you?
Doing great.
Thank you so much.
Great to be on with you.
And I'm always happy when folks like yourself take the time. You've got your Sunday church clothes on.
Oh, I've already done a television interview and done a bunch of law work. You know, I do practice law occasionally.
But we always think of state delegates. You only work from January to March, maybe go back in April for a little bit, and otherwise you're sunbathing in whatever part of the world you can do so.
That's right. Cancun, you know, Florida, the whole nine yards. No, seriously, there's so much work to do off session. And, of course, with my role as a Democratic leader in the House of Delegates, I travel the state a lot trying to find candidates to run for office in different seats and try to raise money to help support them.
Well, thank you so much for being here with us, taking the time to do so.
Sure, it's great.
Let's jump right into things. You are the, 57th District House Democratic Leader in the Virginia General Assembly. So the 57th District is all of Charlottesville, part of Albemarle.
Sure. It's the entire city of Charlottesville and much of the urban ring of Albemarle, including places immediately north of the city, east of the city, and south of the city. It's actually one of the successors to the seat once held by Thomas Jefferson, so that's a pretty neat factoid. I also represent more people in Albemarle County than any one single delegate. So it's really a mix of city and county.
Really? More than one, more than any other candidate?
Yes, there are four people who represent portions of Albemarle. Steve Landis, Matt Ferris, Rob Bell, and myself. And I think I have more Albemarle voters than any of them.
Wow. Folks, we'll be talking to Delegate Dave Toscano throughout the hour. Write down the phone number if you have a question or a comment to make. We will cover a wide variety of topics. We want to hear your input, hear your questions. I'm not going to take them right now, so stretch out the finger muscles, the dialing muscles, 979-0919, 877-WNRN rocks if the toll-free, because not all the topics are going to be Charlottesville, Albemarle District specific. In fact, let's jump into something right away, David. Everyone's aware of what happened in Newtown, Connecticut. I don't know that there's any way to appropriately get into that specific incident, and I choose not to do that at the moment. But there are related topics that I want to ask you about. The national discussion seems to be about gun control mental health research, and if either of those or both of those are specific to what happened.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of people are talking about this because it's a huge tragedy. And again, it raises to the public awareness the whole issue of gun control. You know, it's similar in some ways to what happened right after Virginia Tech. And what we did in the aftermath of Virginia Tech in the General Assembly was we focused on different mental health initiatives that we could push. We made some changes in some of the commitment laws in the Commonwealth designed to get people help sooner and to make sure that they continue to get that help once they were in the system. Beyond that, Governor Kane at the time recommended and the legislature passed additional funding for mental health initiatives. Now, since that time, however, a lot of the conversation has gone away. And in fact, if you take a look at what's happened in Virginia, we have been simply loosening up the ability of people to get guns. Last year, we repealed the so-called one-gun-a-month rule. That was a rule that got passed by the General Assembly back during Doug Wilder's tenure as governor. It restrained people in the Commonwealth from buying more than one gun a month. If they had bought just one gun a month from the time that law was passed, they would have had 240 guns in their basement or wherever they would want to keep them. But now the General Assembly has decided, against my vote, to repeal that. In addition, there were 32 separate gun bills authored largely by Republicans in the General Assembly last year designed to give people greater access to guns. There was a bill that would extend the ability to concealed carry a gun into an airport. There was a bill designed to allow people to carry concealed in their car and in some cases in open view onto a parking lot that might be a daycare facility. And as you know, last year or 2 years ago, we passed a bill that allowed people to carry concealed into bars or restaurants.
Yeah, that's the one that freaked me out as somebody who has a lifelong history of working in that environment.
Oh, sure. Alcohol and guns really don't mix very well. You know, that was one of the reasons I voted against that, but that did pass the General Assembly.
11:06 here on the Wake Up Call. Our guest today, Delegate David Toscano. Special thanks to those in Lexington's 95.3 for listening to today's program. And support for WNRN also comes from Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, celebrating 40 years as your local one-stop source for outdoor gear, apparel, and footwear. This holiday season, Blue Ridge has adventure gifts that includes multi-tools and sunglasses, backpacks, gloves, mittens, snow hats. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is at Barracks Road here in Charlottesville. They have two locations in Richmond. For more information online, it's brms.com. Delegate Toscano, let's continue the talk about the gun control. Do you have any guns?
No.
Do you believe that semi-automatic weapons should be legal?
Well, I don't think people should be able to carry them and keep them in their houses.
Purchase them.
Well, I think under certain restraints, they should be able to purchase them. But, you know, the problem is it's just too many of them. We've got 300 million guns out there in the United States. That's more than one for every person that we have in this country. If you take a look at mass shootings around the world, the great majority of them have occurred in the United States. Not only that, but most of the mass shootings that have occurred in the United States have been shootings with weapons that been acquired legally. Now, why anyone would need an assault weapon or a semi-automatic weapon to do hunting is beyond me. Why they would need that for personal defense is another question altogether. Now, there's a strong history in this country, especially in more rural areas, of support for the Second Amendment. I can understand that. But there have to be reasonable restraints. The founding fathers never envisioned the kind of firepower that is now available to people who want to get weapons.
But they never envisioned the methods with which free speech is used. They had no imagination of the Internet. The speed with which you can communicate across the world, with which secrets can come out, and the follow-up damage that can come from that.
Absolutely, and I think that's what argues for the notion that the Constitution should be viewed as a living document that people interpret within the context of their times. And if you go with an absolute strict constructionist view of the Constitution, it leads you in a direction that probably the fathers didn't even want to have.
WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. Our guest today, David Toscano from the 57th District at Virginia's Legislature. How about we twist or sidestep on this conversation just a little bit? Certainly gun control has come out a lot after the incidents on Friday in Newtown, Connecticut. But a lot of folks say it's not about gun control, it's about research for mental health.
Well, to some extent, it is involved, not so much with research, but at least providing services to folks who are in need. My guess is we're going to find out that this person, and we already have some indications that this is the case, that this person had some severe mental issues. We know that Mr. Chu, who killed all the people in Virginia Tech, had serious mental issues. A lot of these mass shootings involve people with very serious mental issues, some of whom are getting some treatment, some of whom are not. We have people who are falling through the system, falling through cracks in the system, and we're really not providing the kind of financial assistance to the system to help these folks get the appropriate health. We have to invest more money in our mental health system. We have a great system in our region, but that's not the case in other parts of the state. And I think to that extent, if we can put more resources into the system, it will help limit the possibilities that something like this would occur in the future.
We talk about somebody who, the needs for mental health research, for improving it, for people who might possibly be falling through the system. Do you, your thoughts on someone who may be identified as having issues with mental health and then their rights to go purchase a gun? How do you put a wall there if that's what you think is needed?
Well, you know, there is a balance, right? I mean, people do have a right to purchase firearms, but they should go through a background check. And if that background check turns up a criminal history that doesn't appropriately qualify them, or if it turns up a history of mental health problems that might put others at risk if they had a weapon, I think they should be denied from getting a weapon. Of course, it's difficult because people's mental health conditions can change. And, you know, if they have recovered from their problems, then the question would be, should they legally be able to purchase a gun? And what kind of guns should they be able to purchase? Should they be able to purchase things that look like, feel like, and sound like, and kill like AK-47s? Or should they just be able to purchase a pistol or
well,
a
and
rifle
then there's also
shooting?
The issue about privacy, correct? I mean, currently with medical privacy, this is part of my concern, is that it only takes another story to make us forget some of the details involved with the past ones. And so my memory may be incorrect, bear with me, and take the point that I'm trying to make is the gentleman in Colorado who did the shootings at the movie theater, my memory tells me that he was noted as having mental health issues, but privacy rights prevent certain doctors from saying, wait a minute, you over there selling the gun, he shouldn't be allowed.
And that's where you get into the balance questions. You know, you got privacy rights versus the rights of other Americans to be safe and secure. And we always are drawing those lines. If there's pretty conclusive evidence that somebody potentially could be a risk, if they could get a firearm, you know, you want to err on the side of providing for safety of the American public.
Safety over privacy.
Safety over privacy, at least in my view.
All right, let's take a call. Mark, you with us?
Yes.
Okay, question or comment for a Delegate Toscano?
Both. I think the safety issue is, I think, of extreme utmost importance, getting to the point where we can't go out to a movie theater, go to a school, go to college, go to a mall, and we are subject to possible violence. So, with that in mind, I think we have to have greater mental health regulations. We also have to get rid of guns. That's the bottom line, really. When you have one gun for every person in this country, that's too many. When we have guns that can shoot off 60 rounds in 1 minute, that's too much.
All right,
so enough is enough.
Thanks, Mark. David, feedback on that or follow-up?
Well, you know, he makes a good point. And again, if you look at what happened in Connecticut, you know, some of the stories today about these youngsters being shot multiple times with these automatic weapons, I mean, it shocks the conscience. And you say to yourself, why do these kinds of weapons need to be widely available in this country? We do have a strong history of individual rights and privacy in this country, too. And we have to make sure that we balance these competing interests. You know, I said a minute ago that safety and security is really, really important. At the same time, you know, you got to be very careful about this because you can intrude so much that on the individual rights of people that you can destroy some of the great things about this country. And that's why we as legislators always have to figure out the appropriate balance. Right now, in my view, the balance is too far toward gun ownership. But I think we have to always have to be mindful of where that balance is struck.
All right. I don't want to spend too much time on this specific topic, but let me put forth this last question of mine, which is, how do we keep the conversation going? Or actually, more likely, how do we even on a greater level, whether it's back in the 2013 session in Virginia or on a federal level, it seems like we always set the topic aside for a later date, once things aren't quite so tender for those who are particularly involved. How do we do something about it rather than just talk?
Well, I think the only way to keep the conversation going is for individuals and groups to put pressure on their legislators to do something. They need to write their congresspeople. They need to write their delegates and senators. You know, your show goes to a wide variety of folks in different parts of this state. Some of those people are represented by folks from urban areas. Some people represented by folks from rural areas. The danger is that people will think that their legislators, they already know what the legislators are going to do, and then they never reach out to them. They got to put the pressure on. And that's emails, that's letters, that's calls, and saying, look, we need to do something. We want more money in mental health. We want some restraints on gun ownership in this country so that they'll be responsive if they know that their constituents are telling them what they think.
Matt, are you with me?
Sure, I am.
All right. Question or comment for David?
Just a quick comment. I kind of wonder, with the amount of violence that's happened here over the last, let's say, 10 years or so, do you think that the video games, the violence in video games and somewhat in the media has kind of brought a little bit of this on? For the fact that I guess guns have been around for a long time, and these mass shootings really just seem to be more prevalent here recently.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point and one that I think about a lot because it does suggest that you can't legislate everything. You know, there are tremendous issues with family breakup. Excuse me.
Take that quick drink.
Yeah. Family breakup and challenges in our communities. You know, we're not as close as we used to be and we don't watch our kids the way we used to. And you know, some of these things you just can't legislate. You have to get engaged with your children. You have to get engaged with your neighbors. You have to create a community around you that will provide some support if folks are going off the deep end. You know, you just can't legislate some of this stuff. We can do what we can, but that doesn't solve all of the problems that we face.
Well, what I hope happens is that the conversation isn't set aside, and my choices, my hopes don't always win, but what I would like the conversation to keep going between every person and every representative or senator or president so that we can have a true national forum on what to do next, rather than our next to do behavior be sensitive to those who were hurt, and while we wait for the next tragedy, whether it's gun control or a gun-related issue or not, and we forget about what just happened.
Good point.
All right, 11:19 on the wake-up call. Showers likely in the evening. Highs near 55 with patchy, dense fog. 60% chance of showers tonight. Low 45. Then showers likely with possible fog tomorrow. Highs in the 60s with low 43. Right now it's 46 here, 43 in Lynchburg, 48 in Richmond. Thank you so much to the Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let me take a moment and thank Blue Ridge Graphics for their support. Meade Avenue and East High Street here in Charlottesville. Blue Ridge provides screen printing and embroidery for custom t-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses, and can be reached at 434-296-9746. Online, it's brgtshirts.com. That's Blue Ridge Graphics. All right, back with our guest today, Virginia Legislative Representative David Toscano from the 57th District, also the newly noted campaign co-chair for Terry McAuliffe in his 2013 governor campaign. How do you get to do something like that?
He calls you up and asks you.
Fair enough.
I didn't apply. He said, hey, David, would you like to do this? And I said, terrific, Terry. I support you. I'm going to help you all I can.
All right, well, let me jump into something that brings up to me. You're also the House Democratic leader,
mm-hmm.
which is the minority currently
yes.
in the state
yes.
of Virginia. How do you avoid having a real partisan battle here? Because the two expected candidates, you have Mr. Cuccinelli, who for many, I don't think you have to pick a side, many would say he is a strong conservative, very strong conservative, and Mr. McAuliffe, who is noted for, I mean, he's a national face for the Democratic Party. How do you prevent a strong breakage in the Virginia citizens for this election?
Well, that's a really interesting question. You know, one that I face every day that I go into that House chamber, because my philosophy has always been that civility and open argument and disagreement, in the context of open argument and disagreement, is the only way to approach politics. Otherwise, we will fracture and we will not be able to reach agreement and compromise on things that move the Commonwealth forward. The good news in Virginia is, you know, we are a lot better off than Washington. We know the legislators know each other a lot better. I think there's a healthy respect for the disagreements that we have on philosophy, but we try to keep it civil. And my role is the Democratic leaders to work hard for that. That being said, there are forces within the legislature as well as in the state that would really pull us apart. Attorney General Cuccinelli, there's no doubt he's a very strong conservative, and he makes no bones about it. He's going to run a very right-wing conservative campaign. And I think that Terry McAuliffe has a different tradition. I mean, he comes as being the Democratic National Chairman during the Clinton years, and Clinton, people tried to label him as a liberal, but he was much more moderate than folks want to give him credit for.
But it depends on who you vote for nowadays. The people don't necessarily look at the record. If you voted for a Democrat, then you're a liberal, and if you voted for a Republican, then you're a conservative.
Well, I know, and that's a tragedy, because there are a lot of stripes of Democrats out there. I think there are many more stripes of Democrats out there now than there are Republicans. If you look what's happening to the Virginia Republican Party, it's largely been captured by very conservative forces. You know, that's an indication of that is how Lieutenant Governor Bill Bowling had to drop out of the race. He is probably almost as conservative as Attorney General Cuccinelli, but because of the zealots in the Cuccinelli camp, they basically it indicated that there was no chance that Bolden could win that nomination. And
is zealot a negative word choice there?
I think that you have to be concerned about these ideological positions that people take that blinds them from the ability to really get things done.
Again, our guest today, David Toscano, member of the Virginia General Assembly. Let's see. I see where Mark is called back. Mark?
Oh, hi.
What you got for us?
Wanted to, one question. What about gun shows? Is there going to be any legislation on that to close the loopholes in buying guns at gun shows?
All right. I'm going to let the representative talk about that. Thanks.
There's been legislation offered on that count in the last several years, and it's never gotten anywhere. It's been killed in subcommittee in the Virginia House of Delegates. Again, the Virginia House of Delegates is controlled by fairly conservative Republicans, and any anti-gun legislation doesn't get out of even a subcommittee so that it can be an open debate on the House floor about whether or not we want to pass such legislation.
All right, 11:26 here on the wake-up call. Let me thank Dixon Disposal for their support. Dixon Disposal is family-owned and operated for 40 years now. Dixon Disposal works to promote green awareness, and Dixon offers all-in-one can recycling, so you won't have to spend time sorting or trying to figure out which items are recyclable. These recyclable items won't end up in the landfill, so for more information on the all-in-one can recycling, it's DixonDisposal.com or 978-2111. Mark and Matt have already called up today. If you'd like to participate in the show with a question or a comment, it's 979-0919, or if you're a little further out, it's 877-967-6762. That's 877-WNRN-ROCKS. David, let's talk about the coal industry here in Virginia. I noticed just this week, I believe, Appalachian Voices came out with their article. Now, granted, they're a strong environmental group. And I'm always somebody who has to say, if you're strong on one side, you're probably slightly distorting the points just to say what you wanted to say. But Appalachian Voices, who has been on this program before, says that the coal industry costs Virginians $22 million a year. That is, with the tax breaks that they get, does not offset the damage and the money that they bring in to the state of Virginia. And my notes say that last year you had a House bill that brought up the termination of certain coal tax credits. Let's talk about that.
You've definitely been doing your homework. This is a bill that I put in last year in response to a study that was done by the Joint Legislative Research Group called JLARC, which is an independent group, it's not partisan, in which they examined all the so-called tax credits and tax preferences given to various groups in the Commonwealth. What these things are automatic credits given to groups for doing certain things, so that there is, for example, an earned income tax credit that goes to low-income people. There is a tax credit that goes to people who conserve land.
We had the movie folks on here.
That's right.
A couple weeks ago, and there's tax credits for people who are doing their movies in the state of Virginia.
Exactly. And in Albemarle County, there's what's called a land conservation tax credit, and that goes to people who preserve land in perpetuity so it's not developed. So you got all these credits out there, and the JLARC group tried to examine whether these credits operate the way they're supposed to, i.e., if you pass a credit, it's designed to do something. In most cases, for businesses, if you pass a credit, it's designed to create jobs or economic growth. The coal tax credit, however, was singled out by this JLARC committee as being totally inefficient. It didn't create any jobs in the coal industry, and all it was basically a transfer of taxpayer dollars to a very small number of companies. I criticize that. I thought it should go away. That's money that we could use to pay police, pay for teacher raises, invest in mental health, and my bill went nowhere.
Do you think that, I mean, as someone, if you look, Richmond Sunlight, I find to be an incredibly worthwhile website. It seems to give out information without taking sides. Richmond Sunlight, I found, lists you, and I can't remember what the how the device is called, but the more times you're on your page that certain words are mentioned, it's, I guess, the cloud,
the cloud
gets bigger.
Bubble, right.
Right, the cloud bubble, thank you. And that sort of thing, environmental choices are very large in your cloud bubble.
Yes, that and transparency. And one of the things about the tax credits is that they're largely non-transparent. People, a lot of people didn't know that there, all these credits were going to these small numbers of companies for coal. And, you know, independent of the whole issue of global warming, you know, if we want a government that works better and costs less, then we ought to be transparent in how we spend our money. When you put something in a tax credit, no one sees it budget to budget, and it goes on and on and on until that credit is repealed. For me, that's not the best way to use taxpayer dollars. I think if you're going to spend taxpayer dollars on tax credits, you ought to have to renew them periodically, and you ought to have them sunsetted periodically so you have to reinstitute them.
We got a call from James. James, did you hang on?
Yes, I'm here.
A question or a comment for a delegate?
I got kind of both. I know we were talking about the, y'all were talking about the gun issues that, you know, that we have right now. The thing is, I have kind of back and forth, I drive all over the place. For medical conditions, you got to have a report so you'd be able to drive. Why can't they do the same thing on the gun control? Have a doctor's medical report saying that he can have a gun.
That's an that's an interesting point.
Thanks, James.
I think you know, some of these things are a question of what you could get passed in the Virginia General Assembly, independent of how good an idea they are. That one, I don't think would have much shot at getting passed. You know, it's interesting.
But there are other states. Do other states, and I don't know the answer to this, do other states have rules like this?
I don't know the answer to that, but I'd love to find out. Maybe the gentleman who called in can give me a call.
Somebody, as I often say, somebody has to be the first on the dance floor.
That's
and then
right.
Then others join in.
Yes. I would love to know a little bit more about that. If the gentleman can call me, you know, I'm the only Toscano in the book. It's pretty easy to find me. You can go
you
to
also
David
have a
Toscano.
Twitter account that I
at
like, Twitter.
Yeah.
Which is at Del Toscano, which I'm sure assume must stand for delegate.
It does.
At Del Toscano.
Or, you know, they can type in davidtoscano.com, and they'll get my website.
Yeah, again, whether we're talking about the coal industry, the gun issues, people have to follow up. You can't read the headline and the first paragraph and then go away. If it bothers you that much, whether the bother is because of what happened or because of what you're afraid might happen, doesn't matter which side of the gun issue you're on to get the conversation going.
Sure, and it really helps me to know what my constituents are thinking about things. For those people who are listening, I'm going to be doing a short poll just before the General Assembly session. I think it's going to be on my website, and you can take a poll through the SurveyMonkey process. That will probably be up in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to try to advertise it in some of the local newspapers so you know where to go. And click on the poll and tell me what you think, or send me an email and tell me what you think. It's really important for me to know what folks in my area think about things.
All right, 979-0919, 877-WNRN-ROCKS. That's the toll-free line if you need it. Again, our guest today, David Toscano, 57th District, and the House Democratic Leader in the Virginia General Assembly. 1134.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And today's programming is supported by WHTJ, that's Charlottesville's local PBS station. Information about PBS and local programming can be found at ideastations.org. WHTJ programming can be seen in the Richmond area on WCVE-TV. All right, back with our guest, Delegate Toscano. David, I know that this has been, you know, we talked about guns to get started with and then coal, and I'm sure there's a handful of people out there going, when in the world is he going to ask about Helen Dragas? I saw an
Everywhere
article with
I go.
You saying that everybody on the street stopped you to talk about it. You and I chat about it for a minute.
Sure. You know, everywhere I go, people want to talk about the University of Virginia and the reappointment process. For those of you who don't know, when we get to the General Assembly in January, there will be two things that we're going to have to deal with. One is we get to vote on whether or not to reappoint the rector, Helen Dragas, as part of the governor's recommendations for appointments to the Board of Visitors. The governor recommends appointments to the Board of Visitors or reappointments, and the General Assembly, both the House and the Senate, have to approve them before they take total effect. So we'll have that vote coming up in January. And then beyond that, the second set of issues will have to do with board governance for the University of Virginia. There'll probably be 10, 12 bills that will be introduced that will change how the Board of Visitors conducts business at UVA. In terms of Ms. Dragas, who, you know, I've met on several different occasions, and she's a very nice person and has done a lot of wonderful things in her community, the people in my district say pretty clearly, probably by a 9-to-1 margin, that they don't want her reappointed. And I think that given what happened this spring, I think it's very difficult to support any reappointment. I'll have to vote no. And I came out against that very early in this process.
There's a committee that this starts with, correct? I mean, it starts with a committee before you would get your opportunity to vote, correct?
Yes.
And the committee is 15 people, and my homework shows that there's, like, of the 15, three or four are UVA grads. The rest, I assume, don't have any personal interest in whether or not she goes back. It's an 8-to-7 Republican majority. Why would they even care?
Well, that is a good question. Why would they even care? And it's funny because we're so focused on it here. If you go beyond Charlottesville, Albemarle, and the region, a lot of people around the state don't even care. They haven't been focused in on it. That is independent of alumni. Alumni really care. And if alumni weigh in on this issue, she's not going to be reappointed. The governor cares, at least he says he cares, and he has said that he thinks she should be reappointed. So what you're doing is you're setting up a battle between Republicans in the House of Delegates and the governor, who is now a lame duck.
He can't run for re-election, although the 15 people on the committee can.
That's right. And the 15 people on the committee know that they'll run for re-election, even though he won't. And so it's kind of an interesting dynamic that's being set up here. It's hard to predict what's going to happen. The governor said he wants her reappointed. There are a number of people in the legislature who are not going to vote for reappointment. But whether that's enough to keep her off, I don't know yet.
All right. We got a call from Rachel. Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. By the way, the producer gave me the little piece of paper with your name on it, and it looks like the state of Virginia. So let's go. Your question or comment for Delegate Toscano.
Hi, David. I just wanted to thank you for all that you do. You're a great representative for this state and for our area. And we're very fortunate to have you. So thanks for all that you do.
Thank you.
And you said you were going around the state trying to find people to run for office. What are the numbers for the Republicans in the House versus the Democrats? And what would it take to get a majority for Democrats? And is that even feasible?
Well, the numbers are not great right now for Democrats. We're at a low ebb. It's 67 Republicans, 32 Democrats, and one independent. And redistricting really did a number on our numbers, because when you're in control of redistricting, you can draw the lines to basically force people out. And that's what happened in the last redistricting. And so now we're going to have to build back. Now, the good news is that in a lot of districts that are held by Republican incumbents, both Obama and Kaine carried those districts with 50% plus of the vote. So there are opportunities to pick up seats. But this is frankly a multi-year process. You know, I'm fond of saying to my friends in Charlottesville that, you know, you can send me back every year and I can vote the way you want me to vote. But until I change some of the seats in the House of Delegates, we're not going to get our agenda passed and we're not going to have our values attended to. So, you know, we really need to have some changes. And, you know, part of my role as a Democratic leader is try to get good candidates to run. We're getting good candidates around the state, people who have experience in small business, people who are former military folks, people who are committed to investing in higher education and K through 12 education, who don't want to shred the social safety net, who believe in environmental protection. These are the kind of folks that we want to have run. We have a lot of women running this next time who are concerned about reproductive health issues. And we're just going to have to take it one election cycle at a time till we build ourselves back.
Thanks, and, Rachel.
One more question. Are there bills coming forward like the one last year for the ultrasound?
Well, I think you're going to see an effort to repeal the ultrasound bill. Now, we know what's probably going to happen to that in the House. But we feel we need to put that back on the table. That was a travesty. The whole discussion was very, very difficult for a lot of us and very discouraging. So I think there'll be an effort to repeal that. There will be some other efforts made to roll back some of the anti-women legislation that was passed in the General Assembly last time. But frankly, the chances of those being repealed are difficult. On the Republican side, the so-called personhood bill that would extend constitutional rights to an unborn fetus has been reintroduced. And that passed the House the last time. So we're going to see this back. We could potentially be on Jon Stewart again and a whole host of national talk shows.
We're still on Jon Stewart. He makes that quip about weekly.
Well, gear it up.
What was it? Marshall? Is it Marshall still?
It was a Marshall bill. But that bill was passed by, I think, most all Republicans in the House of Delegates voted for that bill, including a number of folks who are representatives from around here. So, you know,
all right,
gotta
Rachel,
watch for it.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you so much again. Okay.
All right, 11:42 here on the Wake Up Call with our guest David Toscano, the House Democratic leader in the Virginia General Assembly. Also, David, you're a committee member on, let's see, the Courts of Justice, Transportation, Science, and Technology. Let's talk about transportation for a minute. It doesn't, you only have to live in the state for a short while to know that the VDOT budget has been cut tremendously. I don't, you know, this is not my thing. I don't know much about the legislature except what I read about it and do my homework for you on the show. I don't know what works or why something wouldn't work. But a conversation that I regularly have with friends is that why can't Virginia, why can't the federal government do what FDR did and have sort of a modern-day public works administration, have sort of a civilian conservation corps to give everybody a job and build up our rebuild our transportation, and theoretically that brings in enough money to pay the money, or does it not work that way? Just not that simple.
Well, I don't want to say it's never that simple, but if you think about it, one of the best way to create jobs is to build roads and build infrastructure. You know, you put a lot of people to work who haven't been working for the last 5-10 years, and you do something that's going to help the economic climate of the state for the next 20 to 50 years. You know, we have not been investing in our infrastructure, whether it's higher education or building and maintaining roads, for a long time. The last time we really increased substantially the amount of investment going into roads was in 1986, when there was an increase in the gas tax put through. That increase has lost a lot of its purchasing power since 1986, whittled away by inflation. what we've got happening, what we have happening in Virginia right now is that we are running out of money to maintain the roads that we, and bridges that we presently have. And very soon we're going to be in this position where we don't have any money for new construction. Now, I know around here people are not enamored with new construction for roads. But if you go to Northern Virginia or you travel into Hampton Roads, people are very concerned about not enough roads for people to get around on, not enough roads to get their goods to the port, to get their goods to market. Virginia is starting to lag as one of the best states to do business in the country because of our transportation neglect, and we continue to neglect that at our own peril.
We got a call from Mark. Hey, Mark. All right, too much feedback there. Turn down your radio or call again. What you got? All right, sorry, Mark. I'm going to ask you to call back. 979-0919, 877-WNRN-ROCKS. David, let's talk for a minute. There's two things I have left on my list that I definitely want to get into. One is you have on your website, again, what's the official web?
DavidToscano.com.
DavidToscano.com. One of the biggest things that I saw on your website, building better communities. I want to talk about how you think that works. What are the methods to make that happen? I think everyone would agree that it's important.
Well, it requires a coalition between local governments and the state government. The local governments have a lot to do with how the educational system operates in their localities, but it is the state that helps provide a lot of the funding. And if you take a look at K-12 investments in education from the state level, you will see that our funding levels are down around 2007 levels. What this means is the localities have to either make up the difference or cut or some combination. That puts incredible pressure on the local tax base and on the residential real estate owner for possible tax increases to fund education. Now, I think that education really is the key to building good communities, because if people feel good about their school divisions, they tend to feel better about their communities as a whole. They tend to feel better about investing in other things to make their communities work better, whether it's roads or public safety. So I think that's the key. I think that we have to continue to invest in our teachers. They haven't had an increase in salary in years, and we need to do more to provide those kind of resources in the classroom for folks.
11:47 here on WNRN Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Our guest today, David Toscano. He's the House Democratic leader in the Virginia General Assembly. David, when you talk about building better communities, somewhere in that page I saw the term walkable neighborhoods. And I want to know, people have a different version of what a walkable neighborhood is. Because if you live in the Charlottesville area, people are familiar, and I think it's called Stonefield something. But it's the new retail slash residential area where the great new theater is, where the Trader Joe's is. And you are, the concept being you can live here in a leased apartment and then walk to your area restaurant slash retail spots. But that retail area has a Brooks Brothers, or will have a Brooks Brothers, as well as a movie theater, which movies aren't cheap anymore. As opposed to the downtown area, a more urban place where you can't walk to a grocery store. What's the difference? What's your definition of a walkable neighborhood?
Well, you know, that's a really great question. And again, you know, having served 12 years on the Charlottesville City Council, you struggle with that all the time. You got to have ways for people to get across streets, for example. They can't be so large and so threatening that they can't get across. And, you know, one of the things I think the county is struggling with is you've got 29, and 29 is not a pedestrian-friendly street.
Now, no.
Now Stonefields is different because I think Stonefields reflects a new focus on the part of the county on what they call the neighborhood model. This is the notion that you take some of the good stuff about urban living and you transport it to new development in the county. That's why this is a mixed-use area where you've got a lot of people potentially going to live there, potentially people working there, and potentially being able to get access to their grocery store and such. Old Trail is another place that's sort of like that. I mean, it is way out in the rural area. But if you've been out there recently, you can see that there are a lot of people who live out there. There are restaurants, there are amenities that look a little bit like urban life, although, you know, they're right below the mountains, so your views are a lot different. But take a look at Charlottesville as an urban locality, and it's the connectivity of the streets are important. In a lot of rural areas, you get cul-de-sacs being built, where the only way somebody can get to someplace else is they got to go out to an arterial street, as opposed to driving in their neighborhood to get around, or walking through their neighborhood to get around. And so some of that has got to happen at the local level. The role that the state plays is a little bit difficult to define. The state has to determine whether they're going to take streets into their network of maintenance. And we've had some bills in the past that would say, you know, if you're going to build a cul-de-sac, we're not going to take you into the network because a cul-de-sac creates difficulties in walkability because people can't get around the neighborhood and around to other spots without going out to an arterial street like 29, and that's not very walkable. And I think you'll see more of that kind of emphasis at the state level because the cost of taking in more roads is increasingly expensive and we can't simply afford it.
11:51 here on the Wake Up Call. Let me thank L. Oppelmans for their support serving Lynchburg for 122 years. In addition to loans, L. Oppelman deals in jewelry, musical instruments, game systems, TVs, with new inventory arriving every day. This holiday season, you can take advantage of L. Oppelman's layaway plan and get a head start on your Christmas list. That's L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street in downtown Lynchburg. And at noon, I think Tamara Winograd is here for Les Temps Perdue, the best of 80s and 90s alternative music. Tamara brings you the roots of alternative because you can't understand where we are without first knowing where we've been. Take a trip back to the times gone by with Les Temps Perdue, only on WNRN. And next week, here on Wake Up Call, Santa shows up. We'll be making some calls. Santa will be calling some kids to make sure they're still on the nice list and double check to see what he needs to put in the bag. So listen in next Sunday, 11 to 12 on the Wake Up Call. You can also send us an email if you know someone who fits into the proper category of still believing in Santa, has a good phone skills. Send us an email. We'll see if we can put them on the list to make our call. All right, next week, Santa here on the Wake Up Call. I'm sorry, David, but that's tough to beat.
I believe in Santa.
Good. So do I. I will say that I've always had good Christmas, and I think part of that is due to Santa.
I'm hedging my bets.
All right. Again, 11:53 on the Wake Up Call. Just a few minutes left with our guest, David Toscano from the Virginia General Assembly. David, this was something, a topic that some friends of mine said, you have to talk about this. This is so important to people. I don't want to pick sides, but there are a fair number of people who say, this is a big problem. When you talk about funds going to places where we can trim money, I want to talk about welfare and unemployment. Should there be drug testing for those who accept funds for welfare and unemployment?
I don't think there should be. I mean, unless you want to extend the testing to all kinds of other people who get public benefits, be they corporations or private individuals who benefit from the state's largesse. Beyond that, you know, if you take a look at the various places where they've implemented this process, they really haven't saved any money. I believe there's this recent study out of Florida that showed that it costs more money to implement the program than they saved by taking people off the rolls. And then you have to provide levels of treatment to them as a condition of getting their benefits. So there will be another bill introduced in the General Assembly this year. Last year it failed. I think if you look at it's simply on the terms of cost-benefit analysis. It doesn't make sense. It's great politics, you know. Why wouldn't you want to drug test welfare recipients? I mean, it sounds great for the sound bites, but if you really take a look at it from a cost-benefit analysis, it doesn't work. And beyond that, you know, you are singling out a segment of the population, almost presuming that they've got a problem without so-called probable cause to believe they really do have one.
And not to tidy it down to some small soundbite, but you said you should do it for everyone receiving money. So the folks who we were talking about earlier, the businesses that receive the benefits, the coal industry, is that sort of what you're saying? Is, well, that, hey, if the coal industry is going to receive some state money, then we need to include them in this same concept?
Well, I think also what you're going to see, yes, that's the concept. And what you're going to see, if that bill gets to the House floor, there'll be an amendment on that bill that will force all legislators to have to take these tests as well. And I want to see what people do on that point when they have a chance to vote for drug testing of themselves.
All right, 11:56 on the wake-up call, just a few minutes left. To follow up on that drug testing for welfare recipients, I have a friend who works in a business, and she gets to see the receipts that go along with folks using their food stamps. I think now in Virginia it's called SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Programs. And she was telling me that while you can't use your SNAP benefits to buy alcohol or lottery or cigarettes, the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program can be used to buy things like sodas and candy and potato chips.
You know, that's a good question. You know, with the obesity epidemic we have in this country, there might be some reasonable rules imposed on that to prohibit the use of those. They call it nutritional supplements. And people are buying potato chips and other things, sugary sodas. There may be some opportunities there that have to be explored to limit some of that.
Yeah, she said the specific information I got was that she sees receipts for ice cream, chips, candy, soda, and Red Bull.
Red Bull.
And those were the things that bothered her with her specific political beliefs. That this bothered her a great deal as to why we're allowing folks who need these sort of benefits, food stamps / nutritional assistance program, these things are not nutritional.
Right, and remember, these are taxpayer dollars. If we're using taxpayer dollars to fund things that make people obese, and then they go to the emergency room to deal with the problems that they have after they've been sick because they're obese, it makes you wonder after a while.
Well, let me know if you'd like to present that as a House bill in 2013, and we'll come up with a good name for that.
Okay, I'll leave it to you.
Just a minute or two left with our guest, David Toscano from the 57th District. You know, we didn't get into education at all. Again, there's all kinds of things. You can go to David's website, davidtoscano.com, to put forth, make your comments. The show will be podcast. You can go to the podcast, sevillepodcast.com. Specifics for 2013 that you're going to put forth.
Well, you know, a lot of it's going to have to do with the budget. And again, my interest is in boosting the investment in higher education, K-12 education, and transportation. And I'm going to be out there fighting for those increased investments. You know, I'm going to try to rein in these subsidies that we provide to corporations that are not being used for their intended purpose. You know, much of my work is going to be trying to rein in some of the excesses that will come at us in the social conservative arena. There'll be other bills having to do that will try to restrict women's reproductive rights. and other things that will restrain people's freedoms. So that'll be my agenda in the upcoming session, and I hope people will weigh in with their concerns, let me know what's on their mind, watch the sessions, tell me various votes, various bills they think I should support and things that I should reject, because without that input, I can't do the job the way I want to do it.
And you can also go to richmondsunlight.org, I believe, and that, again, just a web page that only provides information, and you can see which bills are up, where they go. You can read the full details on what each bill says, who's supporting it, et cetera. And I found that to be tremendously helpful in following what your particular representative is doing and the bills with information that are important to you.
It's a great website.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Again, next week, Santa will be here. Send us an email if you'd like to have a child in your family or friends get a call from Santa. Thanks very much.
This has been your Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on WNRN. The Wake Up Call is supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or Wake Up Call at WNRN.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Angie Cruz. Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.